Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. This is Jamie Russo. This episode is brought to you by my program, the Coworking Startup School. I have not reopened it since November. It is opening the first week in March. So if you are working on opening a coworking space this year, this program is for you. Please do not embark on this journey alone. You will make mistakes and be lonely, and neither of those are necessary. This program is for you if you are investing in your coworking space and want to avoid costly mistakes and stress by getting expert and peer support in a highly facilitated environment. We want to make sure you create the right space for you and your target market right from the beginning, and we want to make sure you get the business model right so that you're set up for financial sustainability that matches your goals. So we will help you with your pro forma, your product mix, design, sourcing furniture, working with vendors, getting your marketing systems down, hiring the right team, or learning to run the space yourself and getting set up with the right tech and more. You can absolutely piece a lot of this support together from the podcast and the Everything Coworking Facebook group, but this program is for people that want to invest in access to a package that provides the information, resources, and support that you need when you need it, and in the order that you need it, accompanied by individual access to me and other industry experts. If this sounds like a fit for you, make sure that you get on the notify me list at www.coworkingstartupschool.com. Today's guest is Flip Howard of WorkSuites, founder and CEO of WorkSuites. Flip operates 21 locations throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston area. I met Flip a couple of years ago. He gets into this, but he was out of the business for a few years and back into it, and like he means business. He has rebranded and evolved the business and added several new locations over the last couple of years. They are on fire. So we talk about the history of Flip's business, how he got into it, and now with 21 locations, what that looks like for his team, how his team functions, how he manages his team across 21 locations. We talk about his virtual mail business and what that means to his overall revenue. We talk about his go-to-market approach in Dallas, which is exploding with flexible office providers. And we talk about who he serves and some of the decisions that he makes that are specific to his brand and who he's serving. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Flip. I am here today with Flip Howard, who is, besides one of the coolest guys I know, as we were discussing on his intro, the founder and CEO of WorkSuites. And WorkSuites is up to 21 locations throughout Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston. Flip, you have been on a growth tear, but you've been doing this for a long time. I know this story because I've heard it on a ski lift before, but for the listeners, tell us how you got into the business and when. When did your first location open? What year?
Sure. Yeah, we started in early 2001. So gosh, almost 20 years ago now. Yeah. And it started, we were actually a tenant of an executive suite from another business venture I started right out of college. I started a pickup and delivery laundry and dry cleaning service for college campuses. And anyway, we had our little corporate office there in an kind of an old school executive suite, and the lady who owned it was struggling and about to go out of business, so we bought her business for next to nothing and filled it up, and then decided, well, we like that better than the laundry business, and we sold the laundry business and just kind of bought more and more of those. So we had our first one in 01, and then one more in 02, and then one more in 03, and just kind of added them one at a time through. We grew from one location to, and we were called Meridian Business Centers at the time. We grew from one location to 15 between, I think, 2001 and 2009. And then we kind of had I was in a business partnership that ended up not going so well. And so from 2009 to 2017, we kind of just coasted. And we didn't really do anything new or exciting with our business. And we just sort of maintained same number of locations, same size, same everything, without really putting any new effort into it. And then beginning of 2018, January of 2018, so 2 years ago, I bought the other half of the business from my business partner and have since been kind of reinventing the way we do everything, because we were kind of 10 years behind on just the way we operated. And that was why we changed our name from Meridian Business Centers to Work Suites, as well as a lot of other things about the way we operated.
Yes, you're back in 2 years ago and decided to rebrand your team. You just mentioned that you're doing kind of an offsite for your team with a few people who have been with you for over 10 years. How many people do you have that have been with you for that long?
I think there are a total of 8 of us that have been with the group more than 10 years. Like I said, we have about 65 or 70 employees total, okay. But I've got a good core group of kind of lifers who have really helped. And like I said, for that 9-year phase where we kind of weren't doing anything because of some partnership dysfunction, we weren't really doing anything new with the business. It was just kind of running. And I was had a lot of other things going on and that core group kind of ran the company for us for a while, which was great. But it's been a lot of fun, but it's been an interesting transition the last 2 years, because that group that was used to just sort of running everything status quo, now all of a sudden Flip's getting all excited about this idea and that idea and reinventing the way we do everything, you know, from our name to our product menu to our website to our pricing to our policies to everything. Because, you know, in the years between 2010 and 2019, the whole co-working thing, you know, kind of came up and changed the game.
Yep.
I really feel like there's a lot that, you know, there were two buckets. There was, you know, old executive suites and the new co-working things. And obviously, most people now see those two things blurring, and all the old executive suites are offering co-working now, and all the co-working places are making most of their money off of private offices, and the line between those two things is blurring. But there's still people generally tend to come at it from one direction or the other, either the co-working angle or the executive suites angle. And I think both really have a lot to learn from each other. And so we were in the bucket of executive suite company trying to learn some of the best practices from what the co-working movement had done, with trying to retain, you know, the good parts of what we'd always done. And how you piece that together is interesting. I feel like I've seen a lot of companies who didn't have the partnership issue that I had still in 2018 or 19 or 20 doing things exactly like they did it 20 years ago. And I don't think that's the best way to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, that's kind of your personality to see the opportunity, I think, but to come in and sort of re-energize the business. So what was behind the rebranding?
Well, two things. One, our old name, Meridian Business Centers, I didn't count the number of syllables, but it's a lot of syllables that doesn't really describe anything about what we do. The term business center was a term in the late 90s and early 2000s that the industry was trying to get stick, and it just never did. No one referred to our industry as business centers, really. It was executive suites, or it was serviced offices, or it was office suites, or it was all these various things. And so Meridian Business Centers was just a name that was kind of 20 years ago, and it was also just associated with a very traditional executive suites mindset and way of doing business. And we thought it would be a really good thing to, while we're reinventing everything, while we're, you know, offering all new products and changing all of our policies and how we handle clients and looking at things in a more customer service and community focused way, to come up with a new shorter name that really reflected that, a new clean look, you know, clean brand. And also one thing I really like about our name, Work Suites, is we're on the, you know, right now I think there's 7 or 8 buildings that our name's at the top of the building. What's real clear, just with those 8 letters, or how many letters that is, exactly what we do.
Yep.
You know, that's real nice for us. We don't have to have our URL up there and our phone number up there. Everybody understands what Work Suites is.
I can't believe it was available.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's a great name.
I know.
Yeah,
it is great. I'm sure, you know, I bought it maybe 2 or 3 years ago now.
Okay.
I'm sure if I hadn't, someone else would have by now.
For sure. So rebranding is a major undertaking. Without kind of really diving into it, are there a couple of like pieces of advice that you'd give to somebody thinking about going through that process? I mean, you had to rebrand a dozen locations or more.
Yeah, I would say it is really hard, and you can try all you want to think of all the areas that you know need to touch with your new brand, and you won't think of all of them, and you'll mess some stuff up, and it will be harder than you think, but even more worth it than you think. I think it has really been a shot in the arm and energized, you know, our whole company. I was really surprised, because we've been around for 20 years, and in Dallas, we had 15 locations, 13 of them in Dallas. And so I had thought that the Meridian Business Centers brand in Dallas had a lot of sort of brand equity, and people had heard of it for sure, but I was surprised how quickly the WorkSuite thing caught on, and it really gave us a good chance to tell our story of how we're different and how we view ourselves kind of halfway between the WeWork style of yep. shared workspace and the Regis style of shared workspace. Yep. Whereas our old product, the old Meridian Business Centers, was pretty much just a, you know, kind of a copycat of a Regis style.
Yeah. And, so for you, more upside than risk in the name change.
For sure. And I was real worried about the SEO implications, too, because yeah. we've had a 20-year history with right. MeridianBusinessCenters.com. And, you know, how badly was that going to hurt us yeah. for our Google rankings? And it hurt a little bit for a short time. 2 to 3 months, you know, we dropped a little bit, but then found our way back up. So that was not as bad of a hit as I was expecting also.
So how have you, since you had the chance to rebrand and develop new spaces, talk about sort of the evolution of your product offering and who you're serving. Has that changed or has it been more of a facelift?
I would say that the core target, you know, like anybody in this business, when you try to define who your target market is, yeah. but then you say it and then you walk around the space and you see a whole bunch of people
right.
who don't
all the exceptions, yeah.
which is really cool. But I would say our target market and our bread and butter hasn't changed at all. We are still focused primarily on people looking for private offices, people looking to have their clients come into the office, and people yeah. looking for a more professional atmosphere, similar to the path, you know, of like a Regis style thing, but without just the dark, depressing hallway full of doors.
Yeah.
So from the
yep.
co-working side of things, we tried to get a lot more natural light in, music, community, larger common areas and smaller offices, yeah. more up-to-date designs and colors, and it's lighter and brighter. And so from a design
yeah, I've
perspective,
I've seen some of your photos of your new spaces, and they're, yeah, I love the color. And it exactly, they look like what you're describing, just kind of really bright and welcoming, but still professional.
Well, cool. Thanks. Yeah, I really feel like there's a lot of people playing in the space where there's, you know, kind of towards the WeWork end of the spectrum, and a lot of yeah. people playing in the space of the kind of the Regis end of the spectrum. And
yeah.
I feel like the middle part is kind of an underserved niche. So that's what we're trying to fill from our look and feel and design of it. But even, you know, it goes beyond just the physical design. I think that the co-working movement brought about some really good changes in focus, you know, for the old executive suite mindset was very real estate transactional, you know, these long agreements with a bunch
yeah.
of gotcha clauses in them,
yeah.
and, you know, holdovers and people trapped in leases they didn't want to be trapped in, and kind of bait and switch pricing things
yeah.
and not transparent pricing. And
yeah.
co-working was really good about saying, look, people don't view this like a real estate transaction. This is a retail transaction. Make it customer service focused and make it simple and just be straightforward. And if someone doesn't want to be with you, you know, they shouldn't
right.
be with you.
Right.
And so,
let them break up.
Right, exactly. And so we've, you know, been trying to for the last couple of years, and I think finding a pretty good middle ground of how to try to bring some of the best practices that the co-working offered and merge it into an old executive suite operation to modernize it. And there's, you know, it's hard. Sometimes there's certain ways you've always done something that you don't even realize isn't a smart way to do it anymore until you are shown a better way.
That being said, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that you've had a business that's been sustainable for 20 years. Not that many people out there can say that, especially at the volume of locations that you have. I just think you're
yeah.
in a really kind of fun, unique position of having this base of, you know, knowing how to run this business and then the opportunity to sort of, you know, evolve it and reinvent it to be, you know, more current, but still kind of maintain those principles that have helped you be successful over the years.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been talking about a lot of the ways in which old executive suite type companies can pick up some of the best practices of, you know, that co-working kind of brought into the space. But the opposite is true as well. And that's
for
kind of,
sure.
I think, what you were just getting at there.
Yeah.
There's a lot about, you know, having to pay bills and, you know, put food on the table for 20 years that, you know, obviously we've learned how to make this business. You know, we've been through two recessions, you know, so there's a lot about
yeah.
how you design a space and how you pro forma it, and a lot about the numbers and dollars and cents of it that
yeah.
you have to blend with the make it cool looking and fun to be in, you know, in order to make it really succeed.
Yeah. And almost, you know, I was just talking to Don Ball, and we were talking about, you know, sort of the challenge today of differentiating and, you know, how do you do that? And we were saying, you know, there are some that will go the, well, let's, you know, spend more per square foot. Like, I'm sure that got tempting for you when you're doing an update on your design and you're working with a designer, you know, who knows what they show you first round. And there's a business model you have to overlay on that and say, well, we have to draw a line, right? You can't keep going for the sake of sort of looking cool, and the business model just doesn't support it.
Yeah, and especially for us, I know a lot of co-working companies get, you know, the bulk of their business or the bulk of their revenue, I don't know about the heads in the door, but the bulk of their revenue comes from corporate accounts, which tend to be less price sensitive.
Yep.
And maybe you can afford to be in the Class A buildings with $150 or $200 a foot build out. That's not our model. You know, we're 70% entrepreneurs and 30% corporates in our for our client mix. So we have to provide value, or the particularly the entrepreneurs aren't going to pay, you know, double what they could otherwise pay just to have a little bit cooler looking space.
Yep.
So we kind of know, I think you sometimes see some confusion with some service shared workspace operators where they're trying to kind of be all things to all people, or they're trying to be this or that and not really have a clear idea. Maybe not so much of who your target market is, but what your position is, what your competitive advantage is.
Where are you going to stand? Like, what are you going to hold firm on? What are you offering? I think especially new operators struggle with that. You know, you get the people who come in and ask for things that you don't do. And then you think, well, maybe we should do that because then that would be revenue I could get. It's hard, right?
Right. Well, yeah. And it is hard for me too. Like you were talking about from the design perspective, there's a lot of things I would love to do that I have to think about. And I say, okay, well, if I did this, could I sell every office for X amount more? And, you know, probably not is the answer.
Yeah.
And so, but there's a lot that I feel like really understanding what your niche is and what your competitive advantage is. For us, you know, we've got a few things that we feel like really differentiate us from our competitors, and everybody else has those too. And, you know, if you just keep your eye on those and design it around it, I think some of the fringe stuff you can kind of see, okay, you know, maybe I don't need that because does it really help me in this differentiation?
Yeah.
If not, then, you know, it's probably not worth the money.
So speaking of, I'm curious about your take on the Dallas market in particular, and you know, you continued to expand, open new locations. I mean, I talked to operators in Dallas who were just like, ugh, you know, the city's growing like, you know, gangbusters, and yet there's a lot of supply. What's your description of your perspective on happening, and how are you sort of continuing that growth?
It sounds like you've got a pretty good understanding of how Dallas works, even though I know you're not from here. It is amazing how, you know, we had a handful of competitors 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and now I feel like there's four new ones popping up every month, and the amount of supply around is just through the roof. And yet, despite that, this is not just lip service. I really feel like the more competitors go in, they actually, each new one that goes in creates more demand than supply. We, despite the fact that we have three times the amount of competitors we used to have locally, we're seeing four and five times as much, you know, total overall demand. We right now are doing more tours, more deals. We're more occupied than we've ever been, despite the fact that there's one on every corner.
Yep.
Now, part of that may be because, like I said, I think our niche is a little bit underserved. They're in that middle slice, you know, between, we aren't really competing directly. We sort of indirectly compete with a lot of the more open, you know, all glass co-working places.
Yep.
And we sort of indirectly compete with a lot of the kind of more Regus style ones. And so our product is a little bit probably more unique in that we're a little bit, we have a less direct competitors. But still, I really believe that, you know, for years, biggest obstacle to people not doing business with us was not us losing a deal over price to a direct competitor or something.
Yep.
It was always just people not being aware of our overall, you know, product, of the availability of shared workspace. And so the WeWorks of the world, you know, we can can say what we want about WeWork and some of their struggles lately, but, you know, they really helped change the way the world looks at office space. And they really sort of lifted the boat for all of us, I believe. And you know, I wish there were a WeWork next door to all of my buildings.
Do you, and are you more suburban focused versus, I mean, do you have kind of a location strategy?
We do have a location strategy. It's interesting in Dallas when you say suburban.
I know, it's all suburban,
I would say,
right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a little different. It's not like suburban, like, okay, we avoid the big city and we go out to these little, you know, almost rural type places. Yep. It's not that. All of our places, there are, you know, plenty of shopping malls within, you know, a minute of them. But we have avoided, up in, for now, in both Dallas and Houston, the actual central business district of downtown. Yep. Texas is a little different in that, you know, the downtown market is primarily corporate, meaning that the people who would occupy co-working spaces in those downtown markets, the person officing there would not be the person paying the bills. Most people who work for themselves don't want to drive into downtown and deal with the parking of being downtown. So we haven't been in downtowns, but we also haven't been out in the burbs either. Dallas is just a big market. It is funny. When I bought the other half of the company 2 years ago, we had 13 locations in Dallas, and I thought we could go to, you know, 15 to 20 before we would definitely need to hit, you know, start going into other cities. I now think that number may be 30 before we need to go into other cities, because there's just so much. We can put them, we've got three or four within just a few miles of each other, and they're all full. And I'm, you know, every deal that I've signed, I wish I had more square footage there.
Hmm. Flip, life is good.
It is good. It's just, I wish I had more square footage there. But, you know, that said, it's been a, you know, this growth from the last, so in the last 2 years, we've added six or seven new locations that are already open, and we have three or four more in the works that are executed that are not yet open. And all of that growth is very expensive.
Right.
Life is good, and my company is probably, you know, is profiting more money and maybe worth more money than ever before, but I personally have less than I've ever had before because having to sink so much back into, you know, getting it going. But it'll be worth it in the long run.
So I'm curious about your team as you've grown over the last few years. I think it says a lot about your culture, the, you know, number of lifers that you've retained. And I'm sure that was a bit of a, to your point, kind of a, just a reawakening for them when you kind of got back into things. And I can picture you sort of running around being the typical entrepreneur with lots of big plans and lots of things to do and lots of ideas. And they're like, okay, hold up.
Those ones that have been there 10 years or more are good at rolling their eyes at me and, you know, waiting out some of my bad ideas. But yeah.
I heard somebody say recently, like, every entrepreneur needs a filter. And I was listening to another podcast and the guy said, he has this guy who has a whiteboard. And when he calls the guy says, okay, I'll write it on the whiteboard. And in a week, we'll come back. If you still think it's a good idea, we'll talk about it. But it's like the parking lot for all the ideas. I'm just curious about how you manage your team across 21 locations. Do you have a central group that handles like marketing, sales, accounting? You know, what happens at the location level versus centrally?
Yeah. Well, so I guess backing up a second for just the overall, you know, team, I'm glad you asked about, because, you know, the team is everything. I feel like I could take those 8 or 10 kind of core people, my lifers, I call them, and I feel like I could get out of this business and go get into any other business and be successful. Or you replace those 8 or 10 with 8 or 10 bad people, and you could give me the most bulletproof business ever and it would fail. You know, it's all about having the right team. And I feel like I'm a big believer in just finding people who are good at things and empowering them. I don't really feel like, and maybe other people are better at this than I am, but I've never had a lot of success managing grown adults into being something other than what they are right now. So I view my role as a manager more in identifying core, you know, strengths and weaknesses and trying to match those up with job descriptions of people and then just turning them loose and letting them do what they're good at and not trying to, you know, steer them too much.
Yep.
And so a lot of those lifers, that process happened a long time ago. And so they've been in a role in which they're totally comfortable in their skin and totally fits them. So they're happy. And I'm also a believer in, kind of like with customers, I feel like if I go to McDonald's today, McDonald's may be a bad example. If I go to Chick-fil-A today, I'm glad that Chick-fil-A's there to give me some delicious chicken nuggets for $6, and they're glad to get my $6. You know, it's a win-win scenario. Like, we're both glad that the other exists, right? And I feel like the employee-employer relationship needs to be the exact same. You know, if I had a friend who owned another company who I knew that one of my key lifer employees would be, their entire life situation would be better working for that person, then it's my moral obligation to, you know, make the introduction there.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, luckily for most of my best ones, that hasn't, you know, presented itself yet. But getting back to your specific question about, you know, kind of remote management and who's where, part of it ties into what I just said. You know, we don't have a main corporate office where everybody's together. We're pretty spread out. And so because of that, you have to have, you know, self-starter type of people. I can't afford people who need to be watched over to make sure they're working.
You can't see all 21 locations of employees at once.
Right. Yeah. Now we do have, you know, we have an accounting team that all is together. We have an IT team that's kind of separate. We have so it's the way our corporation, our sort of corporate structure is set up. We have community managers and community coordinators at the locations.
Okay.
And then we have a sales team that is pretty spread out, that usually has a few locations per salesperson. Then we have an accounting department that's all together in one area, and we have an IT department that's actually pretty spread out. We have a marketing department. We have a facilities department. And believe it or not, I have two of my lifers. One of them works for me running my facilities but living in Colorado, and my head of IT and strategy lives in Austin, and we don't have any locations in Austin. But they were just people who I had enough history with to know that they could get the job done from wherever.
What does the facilities group do?
So there's four of them in that group, and two of them are pretty much involved with all of my current locations, just handling various service orders and everything from make-readies to small remodel jobs and just kind of keep – I feel like I'm always keeping the centers fresh. There's never – you know, it never looks the same at the end of the year as it did in the beginning, even if you've had that location for 20 years. There's always stuff you have to constantly be updating, the art or the conference rooms or these tables or these chairs or that sort of stuff. So a lot of that kind of stuff. But then two of the people on the facilities team manages all of our build outs. You know, we always have, since we've been on this growth spurt, we have two or three locations at a time always being built out right now.
Yep.
So right now we're designing a really cool outdoor co-working work terrace at one of our locations and finishing up the punch list from another one that just opened a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, and everywhere in between throughout the build process.
Flip, I'm starting to wonder how you had time to sit on this interview with me. You've got to have a lot going on.
Because of all those people, you know, in all honesty.
Yeah,
I feel like if there's a role that is recurring, that happens more than once, then I need to find somebody to do it so that my only role is basically coming up with new ideas and meeting with those people about, you know, some questions they have. But I try to not serve any ongoing role.
Have you kind of in the evolution of the brand, have you updated kind of how your team interacts with members and sort of what their role is?
Yes, although we're really lagging behind on that. I feel like, to be honest, one of the first things I thought when we took over in the beginning of 18, 2 years ago, that I really liked the way a lot of co-working places held events and had a real strong community, and there was apps and they were digitally and, you know, physically connected in various ways throughout the locations. And I envisioned, okay, well, in a few months, you know, we'll be just like that, and we'll be kind of like a big happy family where everybody in here knows each other. And we've just not progressed as far on that as I'd like to. I feel like I would still like to see us throughout 2020 make some great strides in that area with hosting events, with having more member engagement and more of an active community. We have one, and it's better than it used to be, but I still feel like some of the competitors that are kind of more towards the WeWork style of stuff do a much better job of that than we do.
It's a cultural shift. It's more of a competency, I think, than people think. And it takes time. But if the intention's there, you'll get there.
I think we will. I just, it's all in all, you know, one thing interesting, we had 15 locations, and I thought of this thing as kind of like a little speedboat, and we could quickly turn it around and fix everything that was broken. And I'm discovering that it's a little more of a battleship than I thought. And we're 2 years in, and I would say I still have half of the things I wanted to fix in the first 6 months are still on that list.
Still, yeah. Well, you've also, but you didn't just, you weren't only stopping and fixing. You were also, I mean, you've redesigned your entire business in the last couple of years. I know, only so many hours in the day. Even when you have a great team behind you.
You know, that whole pesky wife and seven kids business too sometimes gets in the way.
Right, there's that. What is their age range now?
I have seven kids from, my oldest is 21, junior in college, all the way down to an 8-year-old.
Okay, so yeah,
never a dull moment in our house. That's why I need to come to the office to get work done. I'm not getting any work done at home.
There's no working, for sure. But you still have sports, games to go to and school stuff to go to, and it's,
Of course. I'm coaching my high school daughter's tennis team right now as we speak.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I'm curious, because this is always a hot topic, so you don't have to share your all your secrets, but can you talk about what percentage of your business is virtual mail? Is it a key part of your business? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, so I suspect it's a fairly healthy component.
It's a huge deal. I wish I had the numbers. I'd be happy to share. I know we do have, I think we average between 100 and 200 virtual members per location.
Per location. Yeah.
I think the overall, it's close to 20%, 15 to 20% of our overall revenue, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It's big, but it does take a long time. One thing, we hadn't grown and added new locations in 10 years. And when I was doing pro formas for new locations, I plugged in amounts for virtual offices kind of based on what I was looking at all my other locations.
Yeah.
And that was one thing I really overshot on, and how quickly those come, because it just takes a while to build a book of virtual business. A lot of them are people who used to office there, who don't office there anymore and just keep kind of virtual presence there. That's one of the reasons, but it takes a while. It takes many years to have a big, big book of virtual business, but it's huge. But that's another thing. I think a lot of co-working places have wondered why they haven't gotten as many virtual members as they hear about some of these, kind of older style executive suites. And part of it is just the time factor that I just talked about. But also there is not all, but with a lot of virtual clients, there's an image they're trying to convey. And that image sometimes lines up better with kind of a more traditional conference rooms and reception desks kind of a look than it does with kind of a hip coffee loungy look. And so I think a lot of the virtual clients are a little bit more old school and kind of what they're looking for, which I think some co-working places are kind of finding out is not to their advantage.
Yep. Well, and I also think it's not understanding kind of how to build. Like, you were just at Winterfest, which DaVinci hosts, listing with all of the lead gen providers is one of the ways to build a business. It's not all organic.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's harder because you can pay Google clicks for offices that'll make you thousands of dollars a year, but if somebody's going to give you $50 a month, there's only so much you're willing to pay for that lead.
Well, and you're competing with the DaVincis and the iPostals and the folks who are paying Google for those clicks. Mm-hmm. So listing with them is kind of the shortcut, but to your point, builds for a long time.
I
always just love to ask people that I know have healthy businesses, because I think it's aspirational for folks to know like what's possible. And it just, to your point, everybody says it takes time, you need to be patient, but if you're consistent and you leverage the Legion partners, then it can build. And before you know it, it'll be 20 years later and here you are.
Well, yeah. And the beautiful thing about virtuals is, I mean, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, they're 15% of your revenue, and you operate on a 20 to 25% profit margin, that means they're 3/4 of your profit.
Right.
You know, if they went away, you would lose 3/4 of your profits. And they take up no inventory. And we're actually trying to find ways to increase our average. You know, over the last 20 years, the average dollar per virtual office has gone down.
Oh, interesting. Because that surprises me.
Yeah, they just, what you can charge for them hasn't really gone up much because there's so many more competitors offering it. And there used to be a lot of people who were interested in the telephone answering and the telephone service side of it. So we have a lot of people buying $150, $200 a month package. And now we have a lot charging, who were interested in the $50 to $75 package that's primarily just mail stuff. Yep. And so we're trying to find ways to say, what's the 2020 version of a virtual office package that maybe $150 that people would be interested in. Yep. So we're giving away little kind of sampler sized bits of co-working time with it and things like that to try to find ways to give people more than just a mailbox. And we actually are having some success with that, and them also using a lot of the meeting room time. So, we're getting it up using co-working touchdown desks and meeting room time to kind of make up for the loss of what we used to get from telephone revenue.
Yeah, I think that's a super interesting opportunity. And to your point, there's, mostly margin there. Certainly, if you get heavy conference room users, then that you know, mm-hmm. there's an opportunity cost there. But so what's next for Work Suites?
Well, just so keep growing. We are in Dallas and Houston now. We have 4 locations in Houston and I think 17 open in Dallas right now. I think we'll probably get to 25-30 in Dallas and 10 to 12-ish in Houston before we go hit other cities. And I think I could see us doing major market, middle of the country cities. I like Denver and Atlanta and Phoenix and, you know, big cities like that.
All right. So the future is bright and you're back in it for the long haul.
It's fun. You know, our slogan on our website says work is good where you do it matters. Cause I really totally. Do believe that we kind of lose that as a culture. Like everyone talks about work in such a negative way. And yet everybody knows, you know, you don't really feel fully actualized if you're not doing some work. And I'm not saying we all need to be workaholics, but it, you know, work should be fun. And and I think work itself is a really good thing. And so we're having fun.
Good. That's how it should be. Exactly. Thanks for taking the time today and for sharing your story and your perspective, and congrats on your evolution and your growth. We look forward to continuing to follow your journey.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.